Welcome to the Morgan News Hour on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Joining me today is Clarissa Taylor Jackson, the Director of Programs and Outreach for NAMI Metro Baltimore. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour.
Thank you for having me.
This Mental Health Awareness Month, we're talking about what healing looks like in real communities, especially in Black and Latino communities where stigma, provider shortages, cost, and mistrust often keep people suffering in silence. NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore is working closely to close that gap through free peer support, education, and cultural grounded conversations like Sharing Hope and Compartiendo Esperanza. Clarissa, a lot of people are struggling in silence right now. How common is it for people to go untreated?
It's actually very common. In fact, about half of the individuals who are living with a mental health condition go without treatment. Here's the statistic that we know. At the onset of mental health condition symptoms, it usually takes about 11 years for an adult to receive treatment.
Wow.
And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Some of them are economic. As we know, this administration has cut quite a bit of funding from a lot of mental health care resources in our area. And so what that looks like is it takes longer wait times in the hospitals or our doctor's offices. You have to travel farther, and then you have to end up spending more money because you no longer have the resources or the benefits that you did have to be able to make that care more affordable.
So, Clarissa, what does this look like locally in Baltimore and for young people?
So locally, it looks like hundreds of thousands of people living with a mental health condition, many of whom you can't see their symptoms. You can't see what mental health looks like for an adult. When it comes to young people, what it ultimately looks like or could look like is a young person acting out or withdrawing from their daily activities, from just being around family and friends. What we know is that trauma, any sort of trauma, it could be from an accident, a major health issue, financial hardships actually can be a form of trauma, which is what we like to call ACEs, not we, but like in the mental health community, is an ACE or ACEs, adverse childhood experiences that can impact someone's quality of life, specifically a young person's quality of life.
So what about Gen Z and young people entering the workforce?
So what that looks like is you have educated young people who are just at the start of their adult coming into these workforces and need support, maybe different support to what you're used to finding in a workplace. It's just a different generation. They're living in a different time that is challenging in different ways, and they require us who are not of heart of Gen Z to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more aware of the supports that we put in place for them to be their best selves to do the work that they want to do.
All right, so you mentioned ACEs, and ACEs is adverse childhood experiences. Tell me more about that, and does NAMI have any programs to help us out with that?
So you have it exactly right. So what that looks like is young people experiencing trauma. And trauma could literally be anything. It could be dealing with a traumatic health issue or some sort of physical trauma, but it could also be economic trauma. Living in poverty, believe it or not, is a form of ACEs if you consider what that child does not have access to that perhaps their friends and whose families are more well off have access to. All of those are considered ACEs, which impact a child's or a young person's quality of life. And so at NAMI, what we have is a program called Mighty Monsters. Some people don't understand that we don't just talk to adults. We don't just talk to folks that make decisions for their household. We talk to young people, too, because the entire family can be impacted by mental health. And what we know is that children are impacted by mental health conditions and stress and anxiety and all of that. And so we have a program called Mighty Monsters that gives them language to talk about those feelings, put a name to that feeling that they didn't understand that they were having, so that they can then also have language to tell a trusted adult, I'm not feeling well, and this is what that looks like for me, so that they can then go get the help and support that they need to live well.
Now, we talked about our young people, but now let's shift the focus back to our young adults. Studies show that young adults are especially struggling right now. Clarissa, what are the stats showing you at NAMI?
that 1 in 3 young adults are living with anxiety and depression. And what that looks like is about, of those 1 in 3 individuals, 60% of those that are living with anxiety and depression are not getting treatment. So we have a lot of young people walking around here hurting with invisible scars and invisible pain. For Morgan State students, academic anxiety and pressures play a factor into that anxiety and depression. And so we have a program called In Our Own Voice, or Young Adult In Our Own Voice. And we even have a young adult support group. But let me go back to the In Our Own Voice. So In Our Own Voice is a conversation more than anything. It's an opportunity for us to put someone that is also a young adult in front of students to tell their what happened mental health story. How did you even know you were living with a mental health condition? How'd you know that you needed to get help? And then once you got help, what did that look like? When you put someone in front of a group of folks that are questioning you and they're speaking candidly, most of the time what it will allow that person who's listening, who never thought about seeking treatment for themselves before, to start thinking about it. It's all part of our bigger plan to end mental health stigma. We're not pushing a diagnosis on anyone. The stats are what they are. We don't have to make those up. But we are trying to make it okay for someone to be curious about what it could be like for them to live well with mental health. So going back to In Our Own Voice, Young Adult, we spent so much money and time and energy into trying to reach young adults that we have a movie. We actually produced a short film.
Okay.
It basically filming a conversation of young adults talking to themselves about their own mental health journeys. Again, what happened, what helps, and where are you now, and what does the future look like, as a way to reach as many young people as possible. And we also have a young adult support group run by young people for young people, just to talk to themselves about what's going on right now. No pressure, just the acknowledgement that I'm not okay and that's okay. So let's talk about it.
When we think about mental health, we don't always center men in the conversation. Last week, I did a whole week-long daily segment on men and mental health, men and their health in general. What's happening with our men right now, especially our Black men in Baltimore, that makes it so hard for many to reach out for help?
Here in Baltimore, men's mental health is shaped more than just by their own individual experience. Mm-hmm. It's shaped largely by their environment, expectations, and even sometimes straight up survival. And so because of that, we cannot ignore the environmental factors that contribute or even prevent a person, a Black male, a man from walking into a room. Many of our spaces are predominantly woman spaces. Women tend to feel more comfortable going into our support groups, going into a class to talk about their own mental health struggles more openly than men do, for all of the stigma that you imagine exists, because it does exist for men. And so we have to acknowledge that if we truly want to reach men in this city, men in our service area, to help them live well, just like everyone else.
I spoke to comedian Vernard last week about men's mental health and the stigma surrounded by them actually seeking help. What is your advice to a man out there? Because I know we're both women, but what is your advice to a man out there that feels as though he would look weak walking into NAMI and asking for help?
When you consider that most men's self-esteem is around what they provide for their family, being a stand-up individual, someone that can be trusted in the community. How can you be trusted if you cannot keep yourself together? If you are not doing the things that you need to do to stay well from one day to the next, you can't possibly take care of your family. You can't possibly be there for your friends. You cannot possibly be there for that little league team that you coach.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot be there for yourself? What sort of example are you setting? Because we talk about examples. We want to lead by example. Well, this is a perfect opportunity for that man to walk into that space, scared and all, but to lead by example and say, I'm going to put my wellness first because I want to be there for my community, and this is how I'm going to start doing that.
Now, NAMI offers a culturally based mental health program, Sharing Hope and Compartiendo Esperanza. Can you tell us more about it?
So Sharing Hope and Compartiendo Esperanza are conversation starters, if you think of it that way. We know that mental health is a trendy thing to talk about. Everyone is talking about it on social media and in our churches and in our schools. But when it comes down to it, stigma, mental health stigma, impacts different communities differently. What we know is in the Black community, we have heard time and time again, what happens in this house stays in this house. This is our business, right? And we know that that's something that we need to combat. Well, there are other things that we like to keep in community, including the stigma that we have walking into a hospital. It's hard to explain why many of us in the Black community have anxiety walking into a hospital. Maybe not here in Baltimore, but just to put a finer point on it, if you're a transplant listening to this, sometimes it is hard for a Black American person, a Baltimorean, to walk into a hospital because of the stigma that we've heard of how our aunt was treated, how our uncle, how that distant cousin was treated, and we don't want that. Or not even distant. We've walked into the hospitals ourselves and not been treated, not been listened to, not been believed, and then, you know, pushed aside. And so all of that is real. What happened to us is real, and we need to talk about that. And so Sharing Hope is an opportunity for us to have the conversation, say the things that perhaps we don't feel comfortable saying to someone that doesn't look like us. Sharing Hope, I like to say, is a for us, by us sort of program. It is a conversation for Black African ancestry individuals that is led by people who identify as Black, part of the African ancestry community. And so too is Compartiendo Esperanza. It happens to be for our Afro-Latino, Latinx community members. Same concept. There is a cultural conversation happening right now. There are a lot of things in this community, in this country, that are happening right now that is a specific experience to our Latinx, Latino brothers and sisters. And when we are talking about mental health, this is the moment. This is our moment that we work on our own mental health and we support each other. But we have to have that very specific conversation that only someone from a particular community leading that conversation will be able to help get the message through. Because at the end of the day, Sharing Hope and Compartiendo Esperanza are starters. These are starter conversations for you to then feel comfortable talking about mental health and then feel comfortable figuring out what to do next. It's a three-part series, so we're having conversations in the first part. In the second part, we're talking about resources that you could lean on. And then in the third part, we're literally bringing in clinicians to not be your doctor.
Okay.
We're not asking them to give consultations. We are leaning on their expertise based on what they know serving in the community. Again, for us, by us approach. So in the Latinx, Latino community, for those Compartiendo Esperanza conversations, we're bringing in community members to talk to community members so that, again, we can feel comfortable, have the conversation, and then feel empowered to take that very next step. Very important.
Clarissa, why is NAMI Metro Baltimore so important right now?
Because people should not have to wait months to get the support that they need, or at least support at all. I said at the beginning of our conversation that because of the current presidential administration, Maryland is facing a lot of cuts. We need about 30,000 mental health care professionals in order to meet the current need. And so NAMI stands in the gap. NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore stands in the gap. So while you are waiting to see that mental health care professional, you can come to us. You can come to one of our free support groups, both for caregivers and for peers, individuals living with a mental health condition. You can enroll in one of our 8-week classes, all free. You can even just come to our community conversations, all in an effort to keep that momentum going. Again, I told you our conversation program, Sharing Hope and Compartiendo Esperanza, all of our programming at the end of the day really is just to keep you engaged with your own mental health and wellness. And our work is important now more than ever because of the shortfall that we're seeing. We're also seeing mental health issues in the workplace. We know that 83% of employees say they want workplace mental health training, yet many organizations still don't offer it consistently. And so NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore, we have a program called Stigma Free Workplace, where you invite us in to talk about whatever you think is most relevant to your workforce.
So Clarissa, tell us about your work in West Baltimore.
We have a partnership with the West Baltimore Renaissance Foundation, and they have a building called The Factory. It used to be an old gelato making factory. Now, it is a community space for community serving organizations to operate, to do their business, support West Baltimoreans. And we happen to be one of those community organizations. We offer a support group out of the space twice a month, and we offer presentations and just wellness activities, mindfulness activities out of that space, all while partnering with other organizations in West Baltimore to serve West Baltimoreans. We moved into that space over a year ago. We just celebrated the factory opening itself.
That's amazing.
A year ago, it was great. It was well attended by community members, which is the thing. We know that organizations like to be in the community, but they're not really of the community. Mm-hmm. The factory is of the community. It's right there on 5 North Calhoun and Baltimore Street. You probably breeze right past it every day and don't even know it. But next time you are in West Baltimore and you're on Baltimore Street, West Baltimore Street, stop by the factory.
And also you have a mental health hub located in the east, right?
We do. And we love community spaces. So it's another community space that used to be something else. So we are in the Hohen and Co. Lithograph building. It used to be an old lithograph building place. If you are familiar with where Israel Baptist is,
yeah,
the Hohen and Co. building is across the street. I call it Kitty Corner. I don't know what other people call it. I call it Kitty Corner. So it's right across the street, Kitty Corner, to Israel Baptist. And it's another community space where nonprofits, and actually it's nonprofits, it's also some graphic design organizations, but it's a community space where folks rent space to run their organizations. And we are there in partnership with Morgan Cares, the research arm of Morgan State University.
What would you say to someone listening right now who feels overwhelmed but hasn't reached out for help?
I would say that know that you are not alone. We are all overwhelmed in one way or the next, but if you feel like you need a little bit of extra help to figure out what wellness looks like for you in this season, reach out to us, call us. We only do education, advocacy, and support, but the other thing we do really well is referrals. So we know a lot about the serving organization in the greater metropolitan Baltimore area and Carroll County. Now that we serve Carroll County, we will be able to point you in the right direction.
How can people get connected or involved?
Too easy. You can visit our website at NAMIBaltimore.org. You can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on Facebook. Same handle, NAMI Baltimore is our handle on social media. And when you go to our website, when you go to our social media pages, just interact with us. We have a lot of things going. You don't yourself have to be directly impacted by mental health, although everyone feels anxiety sometimes. Everyone feels blue or gets depressed from one day to the next, depending on what's going on in your life. But if you don't, or if you are not living with a mental health condition, you can still be a part of our family, of our community, by supporting us. We have a campaign going on right now because all of our programming is absolutely free to the end user, because we don't want money to be the reason that you don't come and get the free resources that we offer while you are waiting to get treatment elsewhere. So all of our programming is free to the end user, but it's not free to us. So we need a little bit of help. So if you want to support us and you don't directly know anyone living with a mental health condition, or you yourself are not living with a mental health condition, you can support us through our 1111 campaign. It is the fact that every 11 minutes, a person dies by suicide.
Wow.
And it usually takes 11 years from the onset of the first onset of symptoms for a person to get treatment, on average, about 11 years. And so that is a campaign that we're running this summer just to help make sure that we continue to offer our free classes at the Hone & Co. building, at the factory, in Carroll County, in Towson, all in greater Baltimore, in the city.
Now, for someone who's looking for help right now, is there a helpline that people can reach out to you?
Absolutely. So if you need immediate help, please don't call us. Call 988. That is the number that you need to call. Put it on your refrigerator. Put it everywhere you can think of. When you are in a mental health crisis, call 988. That is a national number. Tell everyone about that. But if you aren't in a crisis, but you have a few questions, call us. 410-435-2600. Anyone who answers the phone will help you, not necessarily be able to give you the answers to solve the situation in the moment, but will be able to give you good resources for you to help figure it out.
Are you looking for any volunteers or anything right now?
We absolutely are always looking for volunteers. What people don't know about NAMI Metro Baltimore is that we are a staff of 11.
Oh, wow.
But we serve all of Baltimore City, all of Baltimore County, and now all of Carroll County. And how we do that is through our volunteer corps. Right now we have over 200 volunteers who directly run our support groups, classes, conversations, and presentations with our assistants, but they're running the show. And because of that, we need as many volunteers as possible. And I'll say another reason why we need them, not just because we need volunteers to manage our programming and to keep things flowing, but we like to have representation from every single community in our service area, because one in five individuals looks like everyone. Cultural expression, your sexual orientation, your age, your background, your expertise, all of that. One in five is a straight number, one in five individuals. And so we need volunteers who look like everyone in the community that we serve, because sometimes you learn a little bit better when you have more in common with the person across the table from you.
Clarissa, is there anything else you want to get out there to the community?
Everyone feels blue sometimes. It is okay to not be okay. But when you are not feeling well, tell someone. And if you don't feel comfortable telling someone in your direct community or in your direct friend group, reach out to a mental health professional, even NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore.
Clarissa Taylor Jackson, Director of Programs and Outreach, NAMI Metro Baltimore. Thank you for joining me here on the Morgan News Hour on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Welcome back to the Morgan News Hour on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Look, it's about that time for us to wind down our show. But before we do, remember, Clarissa is still here. Clarissa, say something to the people.
Hey.
And remember, you were talking earlier about there are some movies / videos out there that NAMI actually produced.
Yes, we actually produced NAMI in our own voice, Young Adults, for Young Adults. We actually filmed it at the Hone & Co. building that I was telling you about earlier. We filmed it there about 2 years ago with youth and young adults having a conversation about what happened, what helps, and what the future looks like, all about mental health, all about their mental health journey.
So today we have a very special treat for you, our listeners. We are going to actually give you a few clips of the actual movie. Is that correct?
That's correct. You'll see what happened. These young folks talking about what happened for them to discover that they were living with a mental health condition, and then what happened to get them to get treatment.
Now, if someone wants to find the whole film, where do they go?
They need to reach out to us. NAMIBaltimore.org is the best way to reach out to us, or you can call us at our office, 410-435-2600. But you need to reach out to us in order to get to the video.
Look, here's NAMI in our own voice for youth and young adults.
My symptoms started when I was 13, I think, after my grandmother passed away. because it really affected my dad. And so I kind of became the quote unquote man of the house, and that put a lot of pressure on me.
In my household, mental health was rarely ever talked about. I grew up in a very like love deprived family where it was just like, you don't talk about those kind of things.
I first noticed my symptoms at a very young age. I started with depressive symptoms. I started isolating myself, feeling really alone and hopeless. Then it would kind of ease up, go away. As I got older, I started to experience mania. So it was complete opposite of that. Then it would go back and forth.
So when I was in, I would say grade school, I noticed that there was a lot of pressure and like perfectionism that I was dealing with, where I felt like I couldn't keep up with the 5 days a week of school, 7 hours a day, being surrounded by all of these people that I didn't necessarily like or want to be around or want to be perceived by. I didn't want people to look at me, and that became so stressful that I just stopped going to school eventually.
I started when my freshman year of high school, when I was making new friends. The overwhelming of it all, of people always wanting me to be their affirmation app and always being there for them and not having any time for myself, kind of realized that I've always kind of been that person my whole life.
Yeah, for me, I was kind of always more of an emotional child. Like, I cried pretty easily, but it wasn't anything abnormal until I was about age 14 or so. And around that time, I just started noticing that I was just always tired. I just didn't really want to eat. Nothing really felt fun anymore. If I felt anything, it was just overwhelming anxiety. Even when, like, there was nothing wrong, I just still felt panicked. I think I was 15 or so, and I was thinking like, oh, I want my friend to have that guitar when I die. And I was like, wait, why would I be needing to plan for my own will as a 15-year-old?
The symptom that I really struggled with the most was probably mania, because on the outside, it looks like you're having, for me, a really great time. I am super happy. Then I start buying things. I start driving recklessly. And on the outside, it may seem like minor things, but on the inside, I have little to no control over my impulses.
This is a very rough estimate, but when my symptoms first started, I think I was around like 11 or 12. At least that's when I noticed it. A year before I started dealing with that, I went through a very horrible situation where I was assaulted. It started creeping into my memories and my nightmares. It started changing even positive memories that I had of people outside of the situation. Every aspect of my life was that moment. And I constantly would question if it even happened or not. I started questioning if it was like my fault or did I do something. The memories started feeling like they were changing to try to like add validity to
to the narrative.
Yeah.
Symptoms showed up for me as early as middle school, but I didn't know what they were. I didn't know that they were symptoms until much later, after I got the diagnosis of PTSD, when I finally started looking back and realizing, oh, that's what that was. Like, I was really dissociated from my body almost all the time. I was super clumsy. Everyone just thought I was really clumsy, but that turns out it's a PTSD symptom.
I definitely wasn't eating enough, so I was just tired all the time. I couldn't really do anything I wanted to do because my body didn't have enough energy to do it. It's not that I wanted to like actively die, it's just I didn't want to be there anymore. Yeah, it was just like almost like an apathy about my own life.
Yeah, no, that I think that's exactly the same of what happened to me. It's like trying to describe to people, like, you know, suicidal ideation doesn't always have to be like, oh, I want to die right now. It's kind of like, it's just better off if I don't exist right now.
For me, a panic attack feels like I have no control over my body. I literally feel like I can't breathe. I feel like because of my anxiety, I missed out on just enjoying my freshman and sophomore year of high school. I feel like those are the easiest years, and I really should have just soaked it all in, but I didn't, and I kind of regret that.
So my dad wasn't a huge believer in the mental health stuff, but my mom was a huge advocate for it.
When I was in middle school, I was diagnosed with pure OCD and acute depression. And it was really hard for me to adjust with it, because on top of the fact that my mom was not really interested in even allowing that to exist, it was really hard for me to deal with like having urges and thoughts that I didn't feel like were myself. And I would constantly argue with myself a lot about what I actually wanted or not. And it caused me to develop a lot of apathy towards everything in my life.
We often use words like crazy or nervous to kind of as like blanket statements for anybody who presented with a mental health issue of any kind. And that really got instilled in me.
In my household growing up, it was very easy to talk about mental health because my mom has major depressive disorder and my dad has anxiety. It was kind of weird because I've had two experiences. I've had the first one where it was basically feeling nothing, like numb, emotionless, feeling like absolutely nothing mattered. But then I've also had the complete opposite experience of being completely overwhelmed with emotion and just not being like paralyzed by everything happening or feeling like everything is happening.
I know for me, I knew I needed to reach out for help when I attempted my life. That was a really big eye opener. I felt like I couldn't do it on my own anymore.
I think for me, it was, I got to the point so much where I just started yelling at my mom and just crying, saying, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to go to school. Please, like, homeschool me. Mm-hmm. And I think my mom seeing that, she realized that, okay, we need to work on this.
I feel like I always knew that I needed help, but actually doing something about it is a whole different story.
Maybe it's not that I don't want to exist in this world. Maybe it's just that I need a little bit of help to exist.
When I got my diagnosis, I felt a huge sense of relief because I felt like finally, like, I wasn't broken. There was nothing wrong with me. There was a name for what I was going through. And even just filling out that intake form, like, yes, I'm experiencing this symptom. Yes, I'm experiencing this symptom. It really made me feel seen.
So I reached out to my brother, and I even ended up talking to my father, and he opened up to me for the first time ever about like his own mental health struggles with being in the military. And it opened me up to like understanding that he also had OCD and he didn't even know. And talking to him made me help me a lot. It made me realize exactly why I am the way I am, and to not feel ashamed. He definitely showed me that I shouldn't feel ashamed about it.
My mom's great, but at first she didn't fully understand what I was going through. There's, of course, the whole stereotype of, like, you know, like, oh, emotional teenage girl. And I also just moved across the country. So, of course, it was normal for me to be a little sad. But eventually, like, she was very on top of making sure I had a great therapist that I loved, making sure I had all the help that I needed. So, yeah, my mom really helped me get everything situated.
It took me a while to get to the point of accepting my diagnosis. But at first I did struggle with it, because you hear all these negative things about bipolar disorder, and I was like, that's not me.
I reached out to my mom for help. She's been a great advocate for my mental health. And I also reached out to some of my friends who maybe could relate.
There was a darker period in my life where I thought I didn't need therapy because I was doing okay. And so, yep. And so I was like, oh, I'm fine. I don't need therapy. I also just moved across the country. And it was like after that moment that I thought to myself, you know what, maybe I should get therapy again. And so kind of my current thinking on it is that therapy is kind of like this checkup every couple weeks or however often I go, just to make sure that there's no warning signs that I'm missing, or that I'm just talking to someone about what I'm experiencing that's not a friend or my parents, because I think that's also really important.
Treatment has looked like a lot of different things, like a patchwork. So I've done therapy, I've had medication, so antidepressants, somatic therapy, walking, dance, music, and just a lot of movement in general, body movement.
For me, treatment has included therapy, medication, and hospitalization.
For me, therapy, and also I was raised Christian, so church.
With performing, I liked being able to play somebody else. I liked not having to act as myself for a bit because I never really knew how I was feeling. But I could learn more about what I was feeling through the emotions that I projected onto these characters that I was playing.
For me, the best way that I had to cope with it was music. When I was in high school, I started making music, and it was the easiest way for me to talk about it without feeling like I had to pull someone out of their life and ask them if they were okay to, you know, talk about it. It was the easiest way for me to say exactly what I was feeling and not feeling like there was any pressure to change how I said it or change the setting. It was just, the setting was there already.
For me, what really helps is also a combination of medication and treatment. When you tell someone who's depressed, like, oh, you should go, like, take up exercising. It's like, okay, I don't want to get out of bed or shower or feed myself. I'm not going to go run a mile. So for me, medication really helped me to actually get that endorphin rush from working out that I didn't really have before, and just, like, actually making the steps towards actually working on myself in therapy and not just talking and actually, like, trying to eat foods. And
for me, the medication is kind of like this extra, like, bump. It's like, I need to get over this hill. Depression is like, I can get up here, but I just slide back down. Medication just makes it easier to get over that.
Yeah, I think for me, like, treatment was one of those things where I had to understand that there's a lot of flexibility. Like, certain parts of my life, it was very helpful. And then other times, therapy was way more helpful than the medication itself. And just having someone to talk to, always having that as an avenue was very important for me.
It's been really helpful for people to simply say, when you're ready to talk, I'm here, or don't hesitate to call me if you're having a bad day. Because for me, what's been really challenging is just being honest with people about what's going on. Because when I feel so bad, like, internally, I'm much less likely to reach out.
I have also struggled with the honesty piece. Because growing up, we didn't talk about mental health. I felt like I had to lie about my feelings. So when people ask me how I'm feeling now, I'm honest. I say how I'm feeling. I'm not just going to say I'm fine.
Yes. Love that.
Sometimes when I'm in just a good mood and having a good day, if someone questions if I've been taking my medicine, or if I,
that's the worst.
Yes, it is worse. Or if I'm feeling manic, that really invalidates and makes me question when I am having a good day.
Yeah. I always have to move my body somehow, because with PTSD, like, I feel unsafe a lot of the time. So my body just needs to feel like it has agency.
On a daily basis, I make sure that I take care of myself, similar to what you said. I make sure I get up, I brush my teeth, I wash my face, I take a shower. Sometimes I'll treat myself, whether it's, like, something nice to eat, or if I go out to the movies, go out to dinner, things like that. Or even if it's as simple as, like, watching reality TV. Yes. It's my guilty pleasure. I like mindless entertainment. Something I don't have to think about. Yeah.
Self-care dates. Yes. Important.
So important. Yeah.
An overall upward trend is what I see as success, because, I mean, I'm always going to have, like, bad days or bad weeks, and I always need to prepare for the situation of, like, okay, being prepared for a worst case scenario, but not only focusing on the worst case scenario.
That was amazing. Look, thank you to Clarissa and Nami for stopping by the Morgan News Hour. I hope you guys enjoyed our program today. Remember, you can always catch this episode and so many more on WEAA.org. That's WEAA.org. Or Facebook, Instagram, or X. I'm your host, Deanna Neal, and I'll see you again on Friday for another great episode of the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9. 89.9 FM, the voice of the community.